Penguin Random House Audio presents Running While Black, Finding Freedom in a Sport That Wasn't Built for Us. This is the author, Allison Mariella Desir. To my parents who taught me where I came from, and to Corey Henry and Amir who inspire me to advocate for a better future. And what sport pastime is more emblematic of America's promise of liberty than jogging, the prospect of moving free through these usurped lands? Running is both a literal and symbolic expression of America's supposed ideals. And for that very reason, it's a kind of fool's gold for Black folks. A pursuit with the power to lure us into believing we just might own the same rights as white folks to pass through space unfettered, unbothered, unchastened, alive, that we too deserve the happy boost of a runner's high to fuel our pursuits. Mitchell S. Jackson. Author's note. This is a work of nonfiction. In some instances, I've changed the names of people to protect their privacy. Also, part of the story I share in these pages is how running helped my depression. Exercise is a powerful tool for managing mental health, but it is not a substitute for counseling and medication. If you're suffering from depression or another form of mental illness, please work with your doctor to find the best treatment for you. Introduction. It's 6 p.m. and I'm getting ready for a run. I add electrolytes into my water and shuffle through my drawer. I toss clothes around, searching for an appropriate outfit. It's unseasonably warm, so it might be nice to rock a sports bra and shorts, but I shake my head. I want to be seen as a runner, but I don't want to call extra attention to myself. I settle on a bright, long-sleeve shirt with reflective bands, a shirt that screams, "I'm running! Don't shoot!" As I dress, I debate my route. I could head toward the trail, but then I'd pass the house with the American flag and start wondering if it's safe. And then I'd be annoyed that white nationalists have somehow claimed the flag, as if the rest of us aren't Americans, too. Oh, and that street also has the house with the oversized pickup truck. Damn it. I tell myself to stop generalizing, but decide it's not worth the risk or the stress. I'll go right, down the street that parallels the lake, and once I hit the halfway mileage point, I'll loop back, an easy out and back. Yes, good, that's it. The route has a pretty view of the mountains, and the white woman picking up her mail the other day waved at me. I run downstairs, kiss the baby on the forehead, tell my partner I'll be back in an hour, and go. The first miles of a run are always terrible for me. I plod down Lakeview Drive feeling heavy, my body working out the kinks. By this point, I've started my tracking app and shared my location with my partner, a safety ritual. But is it really? The likelihood that a tracking app would protect me from a white vigilante trying to kill me is tenuous at best. Don't go there, I tell myself. Enjoy the run, stick with the routine. The routine works. The routine keeps you safe, ensures Corey will grow up with his mama. I convince myself this is true because I have to. On my right, the peaks appear in the distance, the highest covered in snow. My mind wanders to the conversation my partner and I have been having about summiting the mountain someday, inspired by a team of all Black climbers attempting to summit Mount Everest. I drift out of the running lane, a car honks, and I jump back and wave. The man inside screams a response I can't hear, and judging by the Trump won flag on the back of his pickup, it likely wasn't something nice. I live in a small town outside a major city with a population of 35,000. 85% of the people are white, and only 2% are Black. I spend too much time negotiating my safety while running. The other day, I ran down the sidewalk, and a white man with a scruffy beard and a blue baseball cap and work boots was coming in the opposite direction. My app was on, telling my partner where I was, which gave me some relief. But my mind kept saying, "Cross, Allison, cross." So I did. I bolted to the other side of the road, worried the whole time that a sudden move might provoke him. The man didn't even adjust his gaze. It's hard to know whether I'm invisible or hypervisible in these moments. I can't know, so I play it safe. Better to assume bad intentions. This way, I increase my chance that my name won't be added to the list, their ever-growing catalog of Black people harassed or killed for daring to exist, for taking up space in a white world. I act as though changing my behavior will somehow prevent me from an unprovoked racist attack. It seems both silly and essential. It's all I have. When I go for a run, I'm not just going for a run. I'm stepping outside as a Black body in a white world. I am Allison Mariella, mother, runner, activist, wife, and I am also a Black woman forced to carry the stereotypes that whiteness has assigned to Black people. I would prefer to just be me, but my country has not given me this choice. I learned from a very early age that I am never just myself in white spaces. I must be aware of how whiteness sees me. My freedom of movement, our freedom of movement, is very much influenced by our collective memories of the cultural trauma inflicted on us by a white supremacist nation. We carry these memories, those from centuries ago and those from last week, with us. They create a hypervigilance, a hum of what can happen when we are doing ordinary things like running. It is a hum that increases in volume when I read that a Black person was killed by a white person, which puts me on high alert for days afterward. Sometimes the worry is too great, and I skip a run altogether, safer inside. Other times, the hum is low, and moving through white space is routine, even mundane. But the hum is never shut off. There is no mute button. Except sometimes, when I run. There are moments on a run when I hear only my breath and footfall, when life's problems get shaken out and resolved over a 5-miler. In those moments, the world around me ceases to be any particular type of space. It becomes air and trees, or buildings and traffic, or nothing at all. I'm just a body moving through space, propelled by my own muscles and emotions, my own drive and power. My legs at times seem to be the legs of someone else, someone in better shape than I am, faster than I am. And yet, with each stride, I know it's me. I am this runner. I am this powerful. These moments are when I feel most free. But at some point, the world returns. A dog barks, a car speeds by, and I am jolted back to reality and the possibility of some type of harm. I often think of sociologist Elijah Anderson's seminal paper, The White Space, in which he talks about the overwhelmingly white landscape of the United States as a place Black people can be disrespected, or worse, and reminded that they don't belong. He describes the criminal stereotype, which means virtually every public encounter results in a degree of scrutiny that a normal white person would certainly not need to endure. The scrutiny, the arrests, the violence Black people encounter in the white space exists for us at all times. Running is no different. When I started running, I was the only Black person in a crowd of white people. The space was infused with white culture, that is, a belief that whiteness is the norm and should be. Running also brought its unique brand of whiteness with its hierarchy of who belongs at the top: white, thin, fast people. The sport's whiteness sent a message about who a runner was, and it wasn't a Black woman. And yet, I kept hearing how running was democratic and a sport for everybody kept getting repeated. The world's most democratic sport. All you need are shoes. Just show up. It was both annoying and funny, because it was clear that this message came from white runners in a white sport inside a white country, and they had no idea what it was like to be a Black body in such a climate. Running hadn't made space for us, so I set out to change that. I started a running club in Harlem. At first, my goal was simply to have other Black people to run with. But as I continued to run and evolve personally, I realized that by our very existence as Black runners, we were disrupting the white narrative, carving out space for ourselves. It became my goal and purpose, my lifelong mission, to welcome more Black people to running. I want to make the sport more racially inclusive, to make running a space where we all belong. That's the story I tell in this book. It is the story of a woman seeking a place of belonging and finding that she has the power and voice to bring about change.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?